Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Mahalo for joining us on The Conversation. It is Monday, July 1st. Skyline turns one this week. We talked to city transportation officials about the operation during this first year. We hear from a HART board member about the contract extension that is being offered to CEO Lori Kaikina. We get an update on the construction of the next leg to the airport in Middle Street. Plus, Kaikina talks to us about that and her future with the project. We also talk pageant culture with the outgoing Miss Hawaii star Dahl Thurston. She shares how her mother's passing propelled her onto the pageant stage and connected her with the public. The conversation starts right after the latest headlines. You're tuned to The Conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. This week marks 1 year of service for Skyline, the Honolulu rail system. It was on the 4th of July last year that the public got to ride it for free during the holiday weekend. The Skyline system racked up more than 1 million rides in this past year. We saw a high of 70,000 a day during the opening weekend and a low of 2,000. John Uchi is the city's deputy transportation director. He was on hand bright and early this morning at the Halawa Station across from the old Aloha Stadium. Rail staff handed out pastries to morning commuters as part of the one-year celebration.
We're doing about 3,500 average on a weekday, and a lot of these people are using different means to get to the places that they go. And that, you know, as a multimodal geek, as someone who loves transportation, that makes me so happy that we give them the means to take Skyline uninterrupted, you know, not affected by any of the congestion we have on our roadways. And people have found, just like water finds its way, they found ways to incorporate e-bikes especially, but skateboards, all these electronic devices that have made it easier for them to get to Skyline. And for those that don't use those devices, they've really taken advantage of the new routes that we put in. I think we put in about 12 new routes when Skyline opened. And so all those routes started exactly a year ago today, on July 1st. And over time, we've seen the ridership by percentage of those grow by some as high as 130%, some as 113%. And it just shows that there's so much ridership waiting to be tapped. There's so much potential there that as soon as we can get Skyline to go a little bit further, we expect there to be a pretty good watershed moment where people will realize the value of taking it.
Well, let's break that down. So talk about specific routes where you've seen the percentages increase.
Sure. We put in a lot of what we call community circulators. Those are 3-digit route numbers that basically travel into little communities, go up into the hills, go into the valleys, and return people either to a Skyline station, a transit center, or, you know, a mainline bus route. And those, when we put them in, we expect them to be pretty low density, right? They go into neighborhoods that are up on the hills and, you know, single family homes and things like that. And in this case, it started off with a whisper, and I wouldn't say it's at a bang yet, but the ridership has gone up substantially on these little routes, I mean, by percent. And that's going to little neighborhoods that never had service before along Skyline. So one of the new routes we put in was up to Wailuna, so all the way to the top of Kaʻahumano Street and back down. And we've even seen growth along residential corridors like that, people are using the bus to access Skyline and other destinations along the way.
What about like East Honolulu side?
East Honolulu side, we did put in an extension to our popular Route 1L. Route 1L used to travel between Kalihi and Hawaii Kai and do it in an express fashion. So it made rapid stops. It only stopped at certain places. And we extended it west of Kalihi through Salt Lake and to Halawa. And that actually showed over 100, I think that was the 113% increase in riders. It was pretty amazing. And what it did was, we're trying to unlock to achieve that watershed moment of ridership. And what we managed to do was connect a very dense Salt Lake neighborhood along Alaʻilima Street and connect them directly to Skyline.
And then what about for key hubs like Shipyard?
Shipyard, we put in a PH-8 route, Pearl Harbor 8, and that ridership is also growing quite steadily. We've never had a better relationship with Joint Base Pearl Harbor-Hickam. We know who the people are in charge, and when they're, you know, they cycle in and out on a three-year rotation. They make it very clear to us, we're handing off to this person. So we don't lose that connectivity anytime somebody gets promoted or moved. We've been in great contact with them to study better ways to connect the shipyard and the various pieces of the shipyard. We have actually the shipyard, but we also have the supply center and just the various destinations on Joint Base, Pearl Harbor and Hickam.
And I know that the commander that we talked to had said that they were, you know, looking at that station over there at the base as maybe a pedestrian mall or to create something in there to get interest in either getting an e-bike or a scooter and then jumping on to the train.
I think that's going to be a really large component of it. When we have been working with Joint Base Pearl Harbor Hickam, we have talked about the ridership potential of that station. And quite frankly, we've left an open wall in the station. So at some point, if we want to actually extend the station over the fence and do that, the construction would not be prohibitive. We've left that knockout space, if we want to oversimplify it, such that we could have just a mobility center that connects right inside the gate at Makalapa Gate. And I guess the issue too is the base is such a spread out area that we want to make sure that once people get just cross the gate, that they can get to where they need to go.
And they say they have a parking problem. And as we're doing this interview, I see a bike and two electric scooters, you know, so lots of people have already done this multimodal switch.
Yeah, and you know, every time I ride Skyline, right, I always count bikes. That's kind of my thing. Or I count mobility devices. And I don't think in recent memory, I mean, I ride Skyline pretty often. You rarely get on a train and see no bikes. And just the variety of bikes you see regular bikes, you see these massive e-bikes. And like I said, it's like water. They're finding the best way for themselves. If we don't offer them a bus connection that works for them, they found their own way. And so part of that is just multimodally is us building up and improving the Pearl Harbor Historic Trail that runs really parallel to Skyline the whole way. And we are working on that 30-mile South Shore bikeway that will actually use a significant portion of trails and other infrastructure that are already in place, some we have to create, but that will span from the Nanakuli all the way to its conclusion at either the University of Hawaii at Manoa or in Waikiki via our Alapono-Alawai Bridge.
Okay, talk about UH. What are we doing to help increase ridership there?
So UH, what we did was we did improve the frequencies on our Route A, which goes directly from Halawa Station to the University of Hawaii at Manoa, such that we timed the connections so that during the peak period, every Skyline train would meet a bus. And so the passengers pretty seamlessly get off of Skyline, go down here at Halawa, hop on their bus, and they're on their way to the university. Same in reverse in the afternoon. We make sure that the connections are good. And we have seen the Route A, even that ridership has escalated since we've opened Skyline.
And so are we doing anything special for back to school in another month?
We're going to do our normal Beat the School Jam promotions. I think this year it'll be pretty much staying the course. We will have two more Beat the School Jams before we actually get an extension of Skyline, I believe. We'll have this August, and then we'll have August of 2025. So we're going to kind of stay the course. We're going to talk a little bit about what we do offer, because we found that people have an impression of rail, right? And everybody asks the negative questions. And when I talk about it in public, right, I always ask, like, where do you hear this? Have you ever ridden it? And a lot of times people ask, well, why is the ridership so low? And I said, well, what do you think low ridership is? And they don't really have an answer for that, right? And then so I heard, oh, I heard this. I'm like, well, did you experience that when you rode it? They're like, no, I haven't ridden it yet. And I said, okay, why don't you ride it? And then, you know, then we can talk, right? Like, I don't want to, like, do battle with ghosts because people heard stuff, right?
Well, I just think, you know, as people drive along the freeways, they see an empty train or a train that's not really full.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is it takes a lot for our trains to look full. I mean, even if, you know, our passengers per hour, it's on par with some of our bus routes. And so that we know. It's just a perception issue, right? And I'm on all the social media traffic pages, Wahoo traffic and all these kinds of things. And it frustrates me to a certain extent that people are going through the same thing every day. They're going through the unexpected congestion or even the planned construction and things like that. And they're sitting here in their cars, cursing Skyline for being empty as it goes over them. And I'm like, I understand that it's not going to work for everyone, but we have to get out of this mentality that this is it. We're not stuck here frozen in time. In less than 2 weeks, we're going to be testing, HART will be testing trains up on the guideway so that we can test clearances and start to work towards that second opening, which I think will be huge. I mean, I like to talk about it in kind of a tongue-in-cheek way of like we're touching West Honolulu or West Kalihi. But the fact is we're punching directly into Honolulu at that point, and that will be a great moment.
Well, I think shipyard, airport, those are just key points, touch points.
And I think, you know, just riding the system in this last year, we've become very familiar with our riders, you know. I mean, they're good, real people that are out there. Like, there's a group of the airport employees, I call them the Skyline Aunties. They meet every day at UH West Oahu at Kione'ai, and they park there, or they get there somehow, and they all take Skyline to Halawa right now. Then they all get off together. They hop on the 20 bus to go to the airport to finish that last 2.5 miles. And I just got to think, like, in about 18 months, they're just going to get right off at the airport and just go straight to their jobs. And I think their quality of life is just going to be markedly different. And that's what we're trying to get to, you know. It may not work for you. Some people it'll work for every day, as you can see the people that it passed through. But for some people, they can ride it to the airport. You don't have to go through the inconvenience of arranging a pickup and worrying about what time it is and whether you're landing during rush hour, what time you have to be there. And I think that certainty will be just amazing for people who have never had that kind of transportation certainty on this island.
That was City Deputy Transportation Director John Nouchi talking with us about Skyline as we mark 1 year of operation for the first leg of the rail system. We'll reflect more on our rail's first year coming up in the show. But right now, we're taking a pause from regular programming for a test of the emergency alert system. Stay with us. HPR has won a first place award from the Public Media Journalists Association for our podcast, This Is Our Hawaii.
A new podcast about the legacy of large land ownership and what it really means to belong in Hawaii today. Oko mako Hawaii keia.
Subscribe to This Is Our Hawaii at hawaiipublicradio.org/ourhawaii.
Support for HPR comes from Hawaii Gas, celebrating 120 years in Hawaii and committed to advancing the state's clean energy goals. Annual sustainability reports at hawaiigas.com.
Let's return to our coverage of Skyline's first anniversary this week. At the HARD board meeting last Friday, members offered CEO Lori Kaikina a multi-year contract. This comes after weeks of drama around an exchange between Kaikina and board chair Colleen Hanabusa and other members about whether Kaikina should be offered a contract extension. There were allegations of bullying by some board members, and Hanabusa offered to step down as chair because of the probe, although she remains as a chair. Roger Morton sits on the HART board as City Transportation Director. He was on hand at the Skyline station this morning to address Kahikina's future with the project, as well as the sudden announcement that the city was stepping in to take over the Beeke bike system as of today.
HART is scheduled to be completed in the 2030-2031 timeframe. And so some board members thought that if, you know, fast forward, if we did a 3-year contract, we get to 2028. And that leaves 2 or 3 years at the end. So there is sentiment that maybe what we should do is have a multi-year contract, perhaps a fixed portion and maybe some optional portions. that would get us all the way to the end of construction of the system. It would be hard, if you think about it, if you wanted to change CEOs with only 2 or 3 years left in the system. That makes no sense. So the thinking is that we'll sit down with Lori and her attorney, and we'll just negotiate what is a fair agreement going forward.
And so how is the board addressing the concerns that Lori Kaikina had about bullying on behalf of some of the board members and some of the strife and the tension there?
I'll give you my perspective. You know, I mean, we all know that Lori is a tough boss. She operates her agency almost like private sector. I think some people have not liked that she's a firm. She does that. But my perspective is that she's done a good job. She's got the system where it is today, and she deserves a lot of credit. She's not perfect. None of us are, except God. But from my perspective, I think that on balance, she's done a very, very good job.
The way it's set up then, the board has until August to work something out?
Yeah, and I don't see that as a particularly difficult thing. We've had contracts with Lori before. Those will probably become part of the building block. We'll take a look at goals and objectives that are new. You know, we've got a new segment that we're trying to deliver right now, segment two. We have some other issues, as you brought up. So, you know, some of those will be folded into the contract, but I don't see it as anything contentious or anything that either Lori's side or the board would have any issues with.
Okay, and then if you can address the news release that came out last week about the city taking over the Beakey contract, how does that work?
Well, Beakey, when it was originally set up, it was set up with a nominal nonprofit that was a special purpose nonprofit that was formed for the purpose of providing governance to Beakey. Meanwhile, the actual operation of Beakey was contracted out to a for-profit company called Secure Bike Share Hawaii, that has some ownership by some of the major micro-mobility companies around the world. What happened was that during the pandemic, some of the sponsors for the nonprofit basically could no longer afford to do it. These would be like Japanese airlines that just were not going to sponsor something because there was no tourism coming to Hawaii at all. And so one by one, some of the major sponsors kind of dried up, and that created a cash crunch for the nonprofit, but not for the for-profit company that actually operated. They're okay, they're sustainable. What's happened with that is, since the nonprofit was funded by sponsorships and the sponsorships have kind of dried up, the city stepped in to take over some governance of the system, to provide a place for consumers to complain, for example, those kind of things that would be separate from the entity that runs the system. We started that up. We're going to do that for 1 year right now, kind of as an emergency concession agreement. And during this next year, we will put out an RFP for a multi-year period following normal procurement processes where we'll select a company, might be Secure, it might be somebody else. But we're going to put out an RFP to allow the market to come in and give us the best deal.
Okay, so we're essentially subsidizing it then for this next year?
No, the agreement was that the city does not put any funding into the system. So the system continues to operate solely on user fees. Now, I would like in the second year and going forward, I would like to use federal funding, which is allowable, to support some of the capital parts of the system, to replace the bikes, to maybe consider an e-bike option, maybe. We're not sure of that. But just to allow the system to renew its physical stuff. So that's what I'm hoping to do in the second year.
On e-bikes, the concern that some folks might have is the helmet issue.
And that's an issue that we could address. There are some bike shares with e-bikes that do have a helmet option. So we just haven't got that far along yet on how we would address that. We have the same issue with e-bikes in general that are owned by the public as well. If you are over 16, you don't have to wear a helmet. And it's something that I think that our department will look at in ordinance as to the e-bikes are becoming kind of a Wild West thing. They're uncontrolled. I've seen the videos. We've all seen them. And something's got to be done to make the streets safer.
And then what about the issue of maybe putting more Beakey stations on city land?
Well, again, you know, for this next year, it's kind of a holding pattern. And going forward, you know, there are systems that operate without docks. There are systems that have a different business model. And so I don't think that we're going to do much other than kind of a holding pattern for the next year. But during that period, my folks will be sitting down, putting together a comprehensive RFP so that we can have the industry come in and make those proposals.
I guess I'm just thinking of, you know, could you somehow work in the Beakey bikes, you know, with the rail stations, right? I was thinking of like Pearl Harbor, you know, yep. Multimodal, right? I mean, what's the plan?
Well, I mean, those are excellent things. I know that even now people are buying their own e-bike, and I see five or six getting off the train here. Even now, almost every train load has a bunch. So people have invested in that. I talked to a couple of the folks who are doing that. Two of them work at Pearl Harbor. It's ideal. You get off here, you go just down Kamehameha Highway a little bit into the gate and then up to your work site. It's about a mile long, and that's ideal. Would that work if, say, we had a system that went as far as Kakaako? Would people use e-bikes? They will. They will use e-bikes, and that would be an ideal place for Beakey to be, would be of those. Now, whether we get Beakey out in Kapolei or not, that's a harder lift. In order for Beakey to be successful, it has to have sufficient demand, and whether or not we could get that in a suburban location, we'll wait and see. But again, that's next year, this year, holding pattern. We just want Beakey to continue operating without disruption.
Talking about e-bikes, I think there's one coming up, right? You're getting off the station.
Yep. I see more. That's a small wheel e-bike. The ones I like are the bigger ones with the big fat tires, and I've seen about 10 of those so far this morning getting off the trains.
Okay, well, there's another one. Yeah, so definitely people are using it. But thank you so much, Roger. I appreciate the update.
Thank you, Catherine.
That was City Transportation Director Roger Morton talking to us about the HART Board's decision last week Friday to offer CEO Lori Kaikina a multi-year contract to stay on the job. Morton also addressed the decision to take over the Beakey bike system for a year. Morton says the financial sponsorship has dwindled as a result of the pandemic. The city plans to step in to stabilize the service and go out to bid in another year. We plan to hear from Kaikina herself coming up, so stay with us. This is The Conversation on statewide member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Coming up, your backyard quiz. We have a buzzy backyard quiz for you this morning. Mosquitoes. You know them. You probably hate them. They're so annoying. There are 8 species found today in Hawaii, but did you know that not one of them are native to the islands? The bugs can transmit diseases to humans, including dengue, Zika, and yellow fever, as well as avian malaria to birds. And because of the warming effects of climate change in our high-elevation forests, mosquitoes are able to breed in more places than ever before. According to the National Park Service, mosquitoes serve no ecological benefit in Hawaii, whether it be as a food source or plant pollinators. We know exactly when our insect problem began. It started in 1826 when a British whaling ship sailed into Lahaina from San Blas, Mexico. After weeks at sea, the sailors dumped their water barrels into a nearby river and refilled them with the fresh stuff, including mosquito larvae in the stream. For today's quiz, we want to know, what was the name of the ship that brought the first mosquitoes to Hawaii? Call 808-941-3689 or toll-free 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. First one to get it right scores an HPR reusable tote bag. ¶¶
Support for the Backyard Quiz comes from Nareit Hawaii, supporting nonprofits such as the Molokai Affordable Housing Alliance, providing Kupuna with resources for building affordable homes on Molokai. NareitHawaii.com.
With a year of Skyline Rail operation behind us, the next leg is slated to open in late 2025. Are we on schedule? Well, for that, we talked to HART CEO Lori Kaikina. We caught up with her early today at the Halava station. HART is expected to turn over the route to the city at the end of next year, 2025. Kaikina acknowledged that the Friday decision of the HART board to extend her contract was encouraging, although the details have to be hammered out over the next month or so.
It's a step in the right direction, but we still have negotiations to go through. And that's why I'm so glad board chair said, yes, we want to get this done by the end of August, because if we can't agree to terms that both sides are happy with, they will have to find another CEO and I will have to find another job. So I'm glad that the urgency is there.
Yeah, because you would like to see something settled in August.
Yes, absolutely. So it's definitely a step in the right direction. I'm so glad they finally made a decision, whether, you know, yes or no, we're going to continue or not. But yeah, now it's the hard part, I guess, is the negotiations.
Well, can you talk about where we're at with this next leg? Because it's been a year now, but are we going to be on track? Because I think the last time we chatted, I think we were a little bit ahead of schedule, but are we still on schedule now with the next leg?
So the next segment, which goes all the way to Middle Street, we are slated to hand that over to DTS before the end of the year and they can open it up. We electrified the third rail on June 17th. And so what you'll start to see is, I'm hoping within the next 2 to 3 weeks, a train will be pulled out. So past the stadium, heading towards Middle Street at about 3 miles per hour, and then Hitachi can start that year-long process of testing and commissioning like we did on segment one.
Do you expect things to go faster because we went through this first leg and we kind of know a little better on, you know, how things work?
You would assume so. What I'm learning from Hitachi and our core systems group, there's a major cutover, meaning when we were just doing the first segment, there weren't riders on there, it's not live. So now you have to do two things. You have to do the testing. So I'm hoping, yes, the testing and commissioning part goes smoother, but there is extensive planning that needs to go into place so that we don't disrupt the segment one ridership, but then yet we have to do it safely so that we will have to shut down. We're in discussions with DTS. Maybe we can minimize it to 4 weeks, shut down segment one, make sure everything is tested and running correctly, and then bring one and two up simultaneously. So that's yet to be discussed between HART, DTS, and Hitachi. That's everything. So it goes from Halava to Middle Street. But segment three, which goes from Middle Street to Kaka'ako, so that's where we're doing the utility relocations. So there's two segments. There's Dillingham and there's downtown. Downtown, the contractor should be done by the end of this year. They are under budget because we've been able to do some optimizations with the columns. Certain columns, if we could move it 2 feet here, 3 feet there, then we don't have to move as many utilities. So they've been a really good partner. Non, our contractor on Dillingham, they have also been a good partner because I've said this numerous times, it's a spaghetti noodle nest under there, all the utilities. And then we have the underground, the 138, the 46, 12 kV lines for HECO. And there's not enough space. But as soon as they're just saw cutting the concrete sidewalk and they're hitting utilities. And it's supposed to be 3 feet, but now you're hitting it at 3 inches. So Non has been a good partner in that, okay, Lori, or not Lori, HART, we're not just gonna sit on our Okole here. Can we jump to another section, maybe on the Mauka side? We're shutting down the Makai side. Can we jump to the Mauka side to do work while we work together to find a solution on that opposite side? So
I mean, we knew that was probably going to happen. I mean, you know, you were at ENV, with the sewer lines, the water lines, it could get pretty complicated. And the plans don't tell you where things are really at.
Exactly. The as-builds aren't accurate, but more so these utilities are so old. Some of them are 100 years old. So no as-builts back then, so our consultant is trying the best that he can, and as the contractor reveals things, what do we call it, unanticipated, right, conflicts, our designer, the HART team, and the contractor are working together to find solutions.
We talk about this with how complicated it can get, and, you know, because HECO just had the major fire downtown and those disruptions, how are you looking at avoiding things like that, you know, for HART?
No, that's true. And there was something in the media, somebody asked, were we the cause of that fire? Because we had just the timing. Oh, we just electrified that third rail and boom, the fires happened. So I'm glad HECO came out and said, no, completely separate, had nothing to do with HART. But we do work very closely with the safety teams of everybody, whether it's the contractor, Hitachi, DTS, HART, HDOT, they're our oversight, FTA, and HECO is the ones doing the designs of their infrastructure, and we're the ones constructing it for them. So we all work very closely with one another.
Is there anything else that you're concerned about just on the construction of this next leg? I mean, I don't know. Are we on track?
We are on track for that third segment. Like I said, Coluccio, the downtown contractor, is slated to be done the end of this year under budget. Non right now, and we're 2 years into that contract, we're still on schedule. So that's one thing I'm a little worried about as we've already opened everything. So I'm hoping that there's not more massive unforeseen things that we're going to encounter, but I am confident in the partnership and the team that if there is, we'll find a solution. So as far as the procurement, the City Center Guideway Station contract, it's out on the street and bids are due July 23rd. And that's the one keeping me and the rest of the team up, because if those bids come in too high, we're in a world of hurt. So we're hoping those bids come in close to our independent cost estimate. And if it does, the GETTAT has been pretty strong. Our costs have been kept low. Maybe we'll have enough to get to Ala Moana.
What can you say about the back and forth between the property owners, you know, Howard Hughes? Can you address that?
I could talk very little bit about Howard Hughes because that is a case in litigation, but I can say movement, we have been negotiating, mediating outside of the courts, and Howard Hughes has been very good. They've been very good. They're also a very good partnership. I think we're close to, we can get out of litigation and come to an agreement.
That was Lori Kaikina, CEO of HART, talking about the construction schedule of the remaining legs of the rail route and negotiations with developer Howard Hughes on litigation over a parcel near the Ala Moana Shopping Center. We also hear from a writer this morning who came in from the west side and was waiting for a bus headed downtown. Kevin Lopez was skeptical at first, but he says jumping on Skyline saves him time and money.
So I came from Eva Beach to Ho'opili side. Going to work in downtown now. I'm at CPB.
And so what is your commute like? Do you jump on the bus? Do you park? How does that work?
I park at the park and ride in Ho'opili, and then it takes me about 20, 25 minutes to get here, and then I'll catch the bus, the A bus, and then head to downtown.
And how does that compare to, let's say, just driving in with your car?
It saves me a lot of gas for sure. And I think it's, you know, it's fairly comparable as far as the time goes. So if I were to drive, well, I think it take me a little bit longer because, you know, you get into traffic, right? But at least from here, it's like 25 minutes to get here and then another maybe 20 minutes to get to town. Whereas if I were to drive, it'd probably take me closer to an hour.
And then you have to deal with parking downtown.
And then parking, yeah, which is like $300 a month.
Ouch.
Yeah, plus your gas, right? So it's like, it kind of adds up after your gas, your maintenance, and then your parking expenses, so.
Are any of your other coworkers doing the same thing?
Actually, I have two friends that live in Ho'opili as well. But a lot of my guys are in town, Pearl City, Air. So maybe, I think they do that.
So it works for you?
Yeah, for me it does, yeah. For me it does. So I can't wait till they extend this thing all the way to, like, you know, the airport or even to, I think it's Kalihi, right? They have that mega station.
Yeah, I mean, just to know that you'll be able to go downtown.
Yeah, I think for me, that would be a game changer. If it just were to go straight, right? So. Looking forward to that.
What do you want to say to other folks who haven't given Skyline a go yet?
Yeah, I say give it a try if you're out west, or even if you're like an IA and you want to save some money, give it a try and, you know, see how you like it.
That was Kevin Lopez, one of the regular 3,000 weekday riders on Skyline. HART plans to begin testing the recently energized line on the next leg of the system in about 2 to 3 weeks. It remains to be seen if the current service from Kapolei to Halawa will be interrupted by the transition as the Pearl Harbor Airport and Middle Street line is added at the end of 2025. Talks about that are about to get underway, according to CEO Lori Kaikina. HART is reminding the public that while the rail route construction is underway on Dillingham Avenue, the Kalihi businesses in the area are still open for the public to patronize.
Support for HPR comes from Haleakala Ranch with a legacy of livestock, conservation, and land stewardship since 1888, working to restore, maintain, and preserve the open vistas and natural beauty of Maui. More at haleakalaranch.com.
This coming Tuesday at 8 p.m. on HPR2, Mayan Chen conducts the Hawaii Symphony in a dazzling performance of Violin Concerto No. 1 by Philip Glass, featuring Charles Yang on violin. We'll also hear Saibe Dance by An Lun Huang, Symphonies for Wind Instruments by Igor Stravinsky, and Transfigured Night by Arnold Schoenberg. That's 8 p.m. Tuesday on HPR2, sponsored by the Rice Partnership.
Support for HPR comes from the Honolulu Board of Water Supply, Ohana, working to protect and manage Oahu's water resources since 1929, for fresh water now and for future generations. BoardofWaterSupply.com.
Now it's time to buzz in with the answer to today's backyard quiz. Earlier, we told you the history of how the first mosquito species were introduced to the islands. That first species, brought from Mexico to Maui aboard a whaling vessel, was a type of Culex mosquito. Nearly 80 years later, a story published in the Hawaiian Gazette claimed that soon after, sailors dumped water from their ship into a river, and locals began complaining of a peculiar kind of fly that sang in the ear. According to the story, by 1827, Hawaiians living around standing water and streams in Lahaina began noticing a new kind of itch caused by this insect. We asked you to give us the name of the ship that introduced the mosquitoes the year prior. The name of that British whaling ship was the Wellington. Later, non-native birds arrived with avian malaria. Mosquitoes that bit those birds carried the disease and began passing it on to our native Manu species. And our winner today, Steve Nordyke from Honolulu, he says he knew the answer from a University of Hawaii ecology lecture. And that's our quiz. If you have an idea for one, write to Talk Back at hawaiipublicradio.org.
You're tuned to member-supported Hawaii Public Radio, streaming and more at hawaiipublicradio.org.
Kaneohe's Haley Cheney Kane was crowned Miss Hawaii 2024 recently. As she begins her reign, we were curious about the state of beauty pageants, especially in light of Miss USA stepping down earlier this year, citing mental health reasons. The Conversation's Wasa Subiona got a chance to talk to the outgoing Miss Hawaii, star Dahl Thurston, who entered the pageant circuit just a few years ago as a tribute to her late mother.
What are some of your favorite memories or accomplishments?
I would say that my reign turned out to be a lot more small scale than I think I expected at first. Like, the biggest memories and the biggest standout moments have been when people come up to me and share their story of loss or share with me that seeing you talk about this has made me feel like I can do it. Because I lost my mom about 3 years ago, and that's the reason that I went on to compete in Miss Hawaii, because that's something that she always kind of wanted me to do. And so I did it for her. I never really imagined that I would win or find success there. But I thought, you know, all I have to give is that I lost my mom and it was devastating, and that there's a way out of that. There was a long time that I didn't think that there was going to be a way out of that pain that I had felt. So for me, the diamonds along the way have been other people hearing my story and taking that as strength, and even just feeling like, okay, I can talk to Star about it because she knows what it's like. So it's been more small scale, people in a local community that have reached out, or people I know that wanted to talk about their journey. And for me, that just, it makes it so sweet. But how it all started was, I was at work one day and I was working on this Hallmark show at the time, just as a COVID PA. One of the producers who knew my mom, his son was my classmate. He starts talking to me, what are your ambitions? You know, I had just graduated college. He's asking me, do you ever want to model? Is that something that you want to do? I said, nah, but maybe one day I'll run for Miss Hawaii. At this point, my mom was maybe 2 or 3 months away from passing away. Little did we know. But he said, well, I'm actually on the board of Miss Chinatown, which is a preliminary pageant. And so from there, I went, okay, I guess I'm going to run for this pageant. And it was going to be later that year, but I was too caught up in my own grief. So I put it off. And then a year later, they reached out to me again and said, hey, this is your year. Like, are you going to come and run? And I waited till the very last day and was like, I don't want to. But he called me and was like, you have to tell me right now if you want to do it. I said, okay, fine. And I remember hanging up on that phone call and going, what did I just sign myself up for? So immediately I started working with a trainer. I started doing Q&A prep with my sisters. And it was all just family, really. And I was going to dance Tahitian, which I don't even dance Tahitian. But I thought, okay, I got to perform some way for your talent. And I was practicing and it just didn't feel right. And I was praying about it and thinking about it. And I had a really awesome experience with spoken word poetry. I had never really done it myself, but I always really admired it. And at that point, journaling had become such a safe place for me to process what had happened and been such a big facilitator of my healing journey, losing my mom. And so I thought, you know what? I'm going to write a poem. That's going to be my talent. And as soon as I decided that, it just felt so me. And everybody around me was like, that's a terrible idea. Can you sing? Like, can you do something else? Like, nobody really got it. But it wasn't until I had written this poem about losing my mom and everyone heard it. I remember the night before the pageant, my whole family was over and I was practicing everything. And I had done my talent for them in my costume, the dress that I had chosen for the very first time. And everybody just kind of was like, oh, like, I get it. If this was really for my mom, running for her, I needed it to be a presentation of that. And I knew that if I got on that stage, anything less than myself, you know, not the most authentic version, if I was trying to really perform and fake it, it wasn't going to work. And it was also going to be an entire waste of my time. So I thought, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it as me, and I'm going to do it the best that I can.
My whole life, I thought perfection was keeping me from failure, but it was keeping me from freedom. The lying snakes of shame had kept me from realizing the authority I have to break my chains and step into a merciful, gracious, abounding in love and faithfulness kind of freedom. So whatever you're a slave to, your unlocked power is your master key. Be courageous, because it will set you free.
And the rest is history. I won Miss Chinatown, and 6 months later, I got the chance to compete in Miss Hawaii.
I did want to ask you something related to Miss USA stepping down earlier this year. When she did step down, she cited several reasons, including mental health. Back in 2021, we saw Olympic gymnast Simone Biles withdraw from competition for mental health reasons. With a greater emphasis on addressing mental health needs in recent years, what are some of the things that test the mental health of a Miss USA or of a Miss Hawaii or other pageant winners?
Well, I think it's bigger than, you know, any specific person's mental health. And I think the bigger question is about how we don't prepare for people to win, and not just competition, but success. Like, people who are successful on that scale, you know, Simone Biles, she's the best gymnast in the world. Miss USA, like, only a handful of people are Miss USA. And I think that for me, at least, all of a sudden, everybody has an idea of what the best gymnast is, or Miss USA. We have this idea and this label. And so I think Noelia is her name. She went from being, you know, just Noelia to Miss USA. All of a sudden, she has everybody's labels, everybody's expectations. She's in a box. And what happens is this identity crisis, I think. And for a while, it's okay, and you're excited, and it's this new thing. But everybody starts to treat you a little bit differently. People have new expectations. And I don't think that enough people who have gotten there talk about how hard it is to hold it. And a lot of people wouldn't want to talk about it because if you haven't achieved something to that level, you might not understand. A lot of people would say, stop complaining. Like, oh, you're so privileged. Like the fact that you're even complaining about how hard it is to hold this position. It's just not something that we've normalized. You know, everybody else can struggle, but we don't let people who have found success talk about how hard it is as well, because it's all relative. And I think the pressure of being the best, because there is no real idea of the best, right? But then we have these categories that label, like, that is the best. You know, me being Miss Hawaii, a lot of people say that was the best that year. And I don't say that, and I don't think that's true. I think it's all about timing and just a collection of factors, right? But like Miss USA, she was the best that year. Like winning, all of a sudden, people put that, like, you are the best at that. And it becomes, for me at least, I had a sense of needing to live up to the success that I had walked through. Because once people see you succeed, they'll like build you up until they're going to tear you down. And everybody always wants more. What's the next best thing? I've got so many questions. What are you doing next? It's not healthy or sustainable for me to keep moving at the pace I've been moving. But everybody always talks about momentum and this productivity, like TikTok, Instagram, what's next? Everybody's always pushing on about what next big, huge thing are you doing? But we don't talk about how those big, huge successes are built through months or sometimes years of work in obscurity, work in quiet. So like once you start achieving, it's like you're supposed to just keep shelling out success. And I don't think that's healthy. And I don't think that it's achievable. And I don't think you can keep doing it and stay sane. So it doesn't surprise me that, you know, Simone was starting to crack under the pressure because it became too much for her to bear. I don't think we're supposed to be these images of perfection. And same with Miss USA. And I also, hot take, think that she could have stuck it out if she wanted to, but she stepped down to take a stance and to say, like, this is not okay. Because everybody signs NDAs, you know, in pageants. So like, if she had just kind of gone off and finished her year, I don't think anybody would look twice at it on the scale that they have this way. And so what I think she did was really brave to, one, take what she needed, but two, speak out and start the conversation about how do we support these women a little better. Because everybody's got their agenda, you know, and a lot of people have good agendas to help. But nobody really understands the identity thing that happens now when you become like a title holder of that scale. I don't know what it's like. Miss USA, that's massive. And I bet Miss America is very similar that way.
I was talking to Marcus Mariota a couple of weeks ago, and he was telling me, you know, once you achieve success, it's important to give back to your community and to help bring along others. You have a quote on your website, shoot for the moon. Even if you miss, you'll land amongst the stars. When you look back on all that you've accomplished in the last few years, how would you encourage someone interested in entering a pageant or just wanting to pursue a dream in general?
Well, one, I like what you said about what Marcus Mariota said, that like once you make it, it's important to give back. But what I don't think enough people realize is that we've all made it in some way or another. You don't have to achieve something on a massive scale to have something of value to lift up your community. And so the first thing I would say is nothing is too small. No dream is too big and no lesson is too small, because it's all an accumulation of those lessons that we've learned that build a foundation for success. And I'm still learning what success looks like, but I would encourage people that your life doesn't have to look like the people you admire. But I think we each have our experience in our life that's so unique, and Keakua put us through that so that we would have certain lessons to learn. Nobody has what you have to offer. And I think that that is so special. And so how I would encourage someone who wanted to achieve something that didn't feel possible would be to take off the cap of what is possible.
Stardoll Thurston, thanks so much for taking the time to talk story with me this morning.
I'm so honored that you even considered to have me on, and let me share my mana'o.
That was Miss Hawaii 2023, Stardoll Thurston, reflecting on her year-long reign with HPR's Russell Subiono. That is it for us today. Tomorrow, we talk about the Last Resort Power Safety Shutoff Program that officially started today. We'll have more information on what it means for HECO customers in high-risk areas. Have a story to share with us? Call our talkback line, 808-792-8217. You can find the conversation as a podcast on our website or on Google, Spotify, or Apple. I'm Catherine Cruz. We'll be back tomorrow with more of The Conversation.